Good afternoon, everybody. This is Michael Coker with Black College Nines. Today I'm going to do we're going to go back to doing our podcast, but I'm going to step away from our podcast. Normally consists of the coaches series. I'm going to step away from the coaches series, and there's a reason for that. As you all know, we've done pretty good with a lot of the HBCU, historically Black college and university baseball coaches, and it was a very positive response. But I felt the need to step away because there's quite a bit of things that are happening in HBCU baseball. So I talked to a few baseball coaches, and they had mentioned that a person that I really needed to reach out to, and I had the pleasure to, was C.J. Stewart. Many of you know who C.J. Stewart is. C.J. has been around baseball for a long time. He is an Atlanta native, attended school at Georgia State in Atlanta, and he was drafted by the Chicago Cubs as an outfielder. But that's where it gets creative. He didn't get any recognition for his being playing baseball. He earned his recognition of being one of the top baseball development professionals in the country. And then he decided to help out kids in the Atlanta area. He went into an area where he founded something called the Diamonds Direct. And he started achieving success in the player development industry. For over 13 years, he has experienced and developed some of the game's top amateur, collegiate, and professional baseball players. And what I like about Stewart is he has an impressive client list, including two members of the first place Chicago Cubs, that being Jason Hayward and Dexter Fowler, and then former Chicago White Sox player Andrew Jones, and then former Major League Baseball MVP Andrew McCutchen. But then again, something kind of happened this year during the 2016 draft. Stewart, who has been known to take kids under his wings in his many baseball programs for inner city youth, he had one of the top draft picks this year. Seattle Mariners picked in their 11th round draft pick, Kyle Lewis. And growing up in Atlanta, Stewart has always reached out for the young kids within the area to get them to understand that it's not about just sports, it's not about your surroundings, it's what you do with your life and how you do things with your life. So when I reached out to the many HBCU coaches, Stewart came highly recommended. And he currently leads some very good organizations, one being the Diamonds Direct, and another being the LEAD, L-E-A-D, which is Launch, Expose, Advise, and Direct. His mission is to create positive outcomes for minority inner city youth by relationships through education and athletics. And that's where it has led to a lot of the kids that CJ has gotten himself involved in has gone on to play baseball at historically Black college and universities known as HBCUs. And this is where it gets interesting. So what I want to do is I want to start this podcast series off with CJ Stewart. CJ, how are you today?
I'm well. Excited to be here on the podcast.
CJ?
I'm here. I'm excited about being on the podcast.
Okay. Well, I know you're big on HBCU baseball, and you've sent quite a few youth to college. And from my understanding is a lot of the kids that have gone to college, they've gone in a different direction. Normally kids that go there using, you know, sports as their only outlet. You have gotten them to realize that it's just more than about sports. Sports is just not even half of what you're going to do. And a lot of these kids are, not only are they playing 4 years of baseball, but they're also graduating. Anything to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to first just start out saying that, you know, it's the message can be clear, but what's got to really be clear and consistent is the message of dirt. And so so for me as a messenger, I have a very unique position in that baseball and coaching is my calling. So this is my calling from God. To be honest with you, there are several other things that I would probably enjoy doing than coaching, but I've been assigned by God to do it. So in addition to that, my spiritual gift is discernment and my earthly talent is coaching. So with that being stated, that's what I'm able to achieve. So much success. So it's beyond the message, but it's the messenger. So I'm committed to continuing my calling to do that.
Well, tell me a little bit about your Atlanta Wood Bat Instructional League. How did that come about?
Okay, so we have a legacy league, which we run through my nonprofit league. And so our mission is to empower an at-risk generation to lead and transform their city. And so the reason why we wanted to do that is because too many coaches, again, the message of development, it has become so overly used, under-delivered, to the point where when kids hear that, they don't take it serious. And so we want to really unpack that word development and make sure we create an atmosphere for black boys to make mistakes. So that's important to baseball standpoint, even more important to life. I mean, one of the things that's very difficult is for black males to live in a society, just here in the United States, and making mistakes and being ridiculed. But with respect to baseball, it's a lot of fun. We don't have baseball coaches. All of our games are self-initiated. We help them understand that phases of development start with assessment, engagement, empowerment, and then application. So what that means is before we start engaging you and giving you information, we're going to first see what you can do. We got to understand that hitting the baseball is not like flying an airplane. Hitting the baseball is not performance first. So we got to start with an understanding that hitting the baseball is not as far as people try to make it out to be. And so rather than me telling you to put your back here, hold your hands here, let me just see what you do first. And so again, we have that assessment, and then we have the engagement. And that engagement part is when we're actually starting to teach you the fundamentals. And then we're going to empower you to be able to help your peers. And so in our league, we don't have a lot of super talented kids. We just got kids that made a claim that they want to play baseball. And empowerment is for them to teach us to learn play. And then it's an application thing. But now we're going to put you in an environment where you have to compete against players that are far superior than you. And we're going to see whether you want to quit or stay. So that our fall league allows us to remain disciplined to this whole conversation around development. I mean, it actually brings to death to hear people tell you what message if they're not carrying it out. And one thing we do an amazing job of in Atlanta is carrying the message out for black boys to the Atlanta.
A lot of those kids, what is the percent that they will stick with the game of baseball?
So that's a good question, and quite frankly, I hope several of them don't. My organization is not designed for every kid to make it. We are a litmus test. So when a kid says he wants to play baseball, he wants to play at the college level, I'm going to give you an opportunity to quit every single day. I love this game. This game is a very important game. This is not a game for people that are wanting to use it to the next level, collegiate and professional, and to be playing around. And so I would say our attrition rate, any given year, we'll have up to about 300 boys that's with us in middle school and high school. And I don't believe we have 100. So we probably lose 50% of them by design. No different than a Navy SEAL. You get a lot of Marines that come out, but only a few are going to be SEALs. So we'll lose about 50% in the fall. And then of the ones that remain, 100% of them go on to college.
How many of those kids come from the RBI program that Major League Baseball has itself involved in? And the reason why I ask that is because in the Atlanta area, it seems like it's more of a close-knit organization than being open to someone as yourself.
Yeah, so I'm going to speak to the things that I've experienced with RDI and the things that I have not experienced. I can't speak to, so I don't know the damn work of them. From the outside looking in, from what I understand, there's a fee to play. The outside looking in, several of the players come from suburban areas of Atlanta. And also, several of the players come from what I would consider as established homes. So you got a mother and a father, and highly educated families. That's what I see on the outside looking in. For me and my organization, we scout out the talent. So to start with, we are focusing on black males with Atlanta Public Schools. Atlanta Public Schools has 51 college students. 80% of those students live at or below the poverty level. If you're born into poverty in Atlanta, you have a 4% chance of making it out. Now, I'm having a conversation with you about black boys in the inner city of Atlanta, not the suburbs. So there are thousands of boys who are struggling. Many of them will profess that they're struggling, and many of their parents will as well. So those are the kids that we're focusing on. So the kids that we go after are the kids that would not have an opportunity to play for RDI. Sometimes because of a lack of funding, sometimes because of a lack of advocacy. And then surely all of our guys that we serve do not have an opportunity to play travel baseball. So we are focusing on black videos that are willingly able to say, we need help. So for us, to in closing on that, there's not a strong presence of RDI in Atlanta serving the kids that we serve. And if it was, we would not exist. There are categories of blacks throughout the country, especially in Atlanta. And those categories are, you have blacks that's living at or below the poverty level. You have middle class blacks. And then you have upper-class blacks. And so many of the families that live at the middle-class level and above, there's tons of resources for them. The ones that live at the poverty level and below, like I did when I grew up, there's not a lot of resources. And so a lot of things are kind of kept away from those families. But because of my experience that I had living in Atlanta, and because of the blessing that I had to be in the top 1% of instructors in this country, Atlanta wakes up every day knowing that poor black boys have a chance that CJ Stewart is here.
Well, CJ, you do more for them than just baseball. You let students on a 20-day camp, my understanding, called the American Explorers, the Path to Leadership, with help from the Urban Youth of Flourish and Thrive organization. Am I correct?
Yeah, so we partnered with the Arthur Blank Foundation, Arthur Blank being the owner of the Falcon, co-founders of Home Depot, and so Home Depot is right here in Atlanta. So one of the things that he established 2 years ago was American Explorers, and it was the focus to get youth from the inner city of Atlanta to go to Montana for like I said, 21 days. And so I went there with them. I had two ambassadors with me. I was there for about 5 days. Let me tell you, an amazing experience. I'm a black man in the city of Atlanta. So it was my first time going to Montana, and it was a culture shock being in the woods. I mean, I didn't see any bears, but they were there. But it was an amazing experience for our ambassadors because they got outside of their community and they got an understanding of grit, which is strength of character. So we spent a lot of time trying to help boys, black boys, develop character, and that's good. But grit is strength of character. And I tell you, I mean, it was almost a shame that these black boys had to go to Montana to develop grit. When you live in poverty every day, that's grit. And so that's a differential advantage that, that black boys have that's not seized. It's grit. Grit is strength of character. So, you know, even you can say that somebody is a good person, but let life happen to them like a bad health report, then all of a sudden that good person is no longer a good person because they lack grit. So anyway, that American Explorers opportunity is just an example of how we do a great job of collaborating. Because let me tell you, I'm not raising money to do anything that's already out there. My job as the CEO of Lead is just to make sure that anything that we're involved in our boys with, I have to take up there, something that's been beneficial not only for them, but for the entire city of Atlanta. So this is not one of those good for you organizations. I love my city, and I am willing to get to you that want to leave in Atlanta.
Well, next year, my understanding is you're going to be doing the same thing, but you're going to take them to, I think it's North Carolina or South Carolina?
Well, right now, we don't have any plans of going outside of, the, of Atlanta as of yet. We do have a methodology that is... that's really good and really strong. So I do have a desire to take it to another state. I mean, that hasn't been something that we've spent a lot of time discussing. But that is a very important thing. And I know at some point we're going to have to share this methodology with others. Listen, I mean, the decline of blacks in baseball is not because of a lack of interest in it. Back in the day before the word coach was used in the context of athletics, it was used for the purpose of transportation. So you had a horse and you had a coach. Okay, so the coach, let's say it could hold 10 people. Well, if the horse and the coach are, and there are 15 people wanting to get inside this 10-passenger coach, that means that 10 people can get in and 5 people can't. Now, once we have the coach, if we're in Georgia and the 10 people need to get to Florida, then we got to be going out. And when we open the door, we want to be in Florida. And so, unfortunately, we have a lot of well-meaning men and women that are coaching in baseball, but your job is to make sure folks get to where they got to go. Alive and safe, and so we have the dreams of a lot of kids that end up stopping when they get in front of the wrong coach. And so we do have a very strong methodology that allows kids to understand what it truly means to be serious, a methodology that allows them to jump in the experience and say, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. But then also that same methodology lets them know that, hey, you know what, I can be good. And then those things that I can't see, OCG is going to be an advocate for me to make sure that I can play at the college and professional level.
Well, that goes back to HBCU baseball. You've recently brought back, you did it in the past. You hosted the HBCU Baseball All-Star Review, which consisted of... players that have completed their 4 years of college eligibility, and you host an all-star game for them with scouts. Now that leads to my next thing I would like to discuss with you about blacks in baseball in the collegiate and professional level. One of the problems that's going on in HBCU baseball is the draft. Don't get me wrong, Division I has they're the cream of the crop, especially at HBCU baseball. This year, there were 4 draft kids taken by Major League Baseball. Last year, in 2015, there were 11. The year before that, in 2014, there were 8. The problem with Major League Baseball is the scouts are lying to the HBCU coaches when it comes to the lower levels. There's a ton of talent at the lower level that's not getting drafted. And Major League Baseball needs to back up its words and make sure scouts come out to support African Americans that are involved in baseball. This year, there was a kid from Jarvis Christian College in Texas named Javion Randall. For 3 years, this kid hit over 355 batting average. This year he hit .477, drove in 50 runs, 50 runs batted in, and the scouts were as high on this kid. Come this past June draft, he was not drafted and not even offered a free agent look or a free agent offer. And still, he's tried out for 8 of Major League Baseball teams, and they've said we'll get back with him. And what's surprising, CJ, is he has gone on and he was at the top of their list for their tools. Once they rated his skills, he was at the top of the list. Still, the kid sits at home. What's going on with Major League Baseball and HBCU?
Well, there's so much that I can say on that, but I'm gonna be very disciplined and just really focus on being very clear. So the first thing is, in order to increase the number of blacks in baseball, we have to have a conversation about race and bias. Those are conversations that can't be avoided, and those are conversations that I do a very good job of facilitating with my experience. In life, I'm 40, and I would like to say that I'm an expert on black men. We got to have a conversation, one that's very, that people don't have. The other thing we got to really also understand is that it is between tools and fields. Two totally different things. So, the running speed of the tool, stealing bases is a skill. And so, from a college standpoint, and I'll be able to really drill down on the HBCU part, and the conversation is not so much about HBCU as much as it is about black players, black men, and how they're perceived. You got to be more than just fast. You got to be able to prove that with this pitcher on the mound who's skillful and holding runners, and this catcher behind the plate that is skillful with receiving the ball and throwing, you being fast is not enough if you're not able to have a skill with stealing bases. So, these are conversations I've had with several coaches that are late. And again, because I've been able to do a really good job, and it's a call of mine, something I enjoy, create a place where people can talk. There is a perception that black males are combative, uncoachable, lazy. We'll just stick with those three. And I know even for me, in my case, when I was high school and even went into college, I was a good kid, but because I didn't communicate well, I actually successfully hit that mold of being combative, uncoachable, and lazy. God, not today, because I've gone through a lot of different things before. And so when that perception is there, if I'm a white scout and there's no accountability for me, then I just continue to go on and just scout from the having this bias, and there's no reason for me to get a black player a good look. So now let me just talk about this right here. So in order to be successful in anything in life, and we'll use this for baseball as a framework, number one, you have to have character, and character is simply who you are. Things like excellence. So my core values would be excellence, integrity, loyalty, stewardship, and teamwork. And so I don't have a whole lot of time to unpack those, but those are my 6 core values that I govern my life by. And we'll put that on the bucket of character. You got to have character. You have to have grit. You have to have desire. You have to have knowledge. And you have to have good habits. So there's already a perception that black boys don't have that. There's a perception that in some suburban communities that blacks may have that. But even with that being said, I mean, those are things that we got to make sure that we're having a conversation about and discussing with all scouts, especially white scouts. You know, how do you feel about black players? Like, how do you feel about them? And really digging deep, but going beyond, well, you know, I'm colorblind. I don't want anybody to be colorblind around me. I'm black. I need you to know that I'm black. But we need to also have a conversation around how do you perceive me. So with that being said, if you have a black player in the HBCU and you have a question about his character, his grit, his desire, his knowledge, and his habit. All of those things make up his tools. I'm sorry, all those things are the things that bridges his tools to his skill. So if you're really fast, but there's a question of your character, you're not going to get drafted. If you are, you throw 100 miles an hour and there's a question of your desire, you're not going to get drafted. So now, coaches at the ACC level, look, I can care less about what you know about you. Those five things that I just talked about in that framework need to be covered. Character. You need to be making an investment to make sure the players understand that, because that's the reason why my career was short, because of a lack of character. Grit. Desire. For me, when I play, I care more about professional. I care more about going to the club than, you know, as my white roommate. And so on and so forth. And so, you know, hopefully it's going to be on that instead of the next question we ask. I'll give you some good news. And the reason why it's so important to have a conversation about ratings. So John Schertz, who is the vice chairman for the Atlanta Braves, is a very good friend of mine. He's somebody that I trust. He is a really good man. And I'm very careful to talk to him about different things because I don't like hearing no. But one of the quickest ways to get a no from people with influence and power is to bring something to them that's stupid. So I just entered a conversation with him, and I'm now going through a process to be a scout for the Atlanta Braves with a focus, a primary focus on the scouting of black players. That's it. So when I show up to the field, it's because there's at least one black player here that needs a serious look to begin drafting. So if I drive into Louisiana to watch a Southern University game, you know, run by Coach Kador, who recruited me out of high school, my checklist of things, because I can easily see the tools. I'm not going to sit there and waste my time to be at the field all day long with that. Either they're there or not. But then I need to be in this order: character, grit, desire, knowledge, and habits. That's my job. So it's not official yet, but I'm going through this process. But I'm almost certain that it'll happen. I'm really excited about being able to be a standard across this country of scouting for black players. I want to be the standard of how to do it.
Well, the problem right now is that baseball and its recruiting, well, I shouldn't say recruiting, yeah, recruiting has really changed. I've talked to a couple former players who runs summer baseball leagues. One of them is Ken Jennings, who runs the Florida Extreme Baseball League. And him and I talked quite a bit, and recently we had a conversation, and he opened up to me a lot about baseball, and so has many coaches. Baseball has gotten away from raw talent. A lot of kids' parents are paying for their summer baseball camps, which include at the collegiate level, once school ends, for this, take that summer break. And there's a couple scouts that run baseball scouting programs, where the average kid from an urban environment does not have the necessary funds to play summer league travel and get himself exposed to the major league scouts. And there's a lot of kids out there that have that raw talent, and they're not being picked up on. It's like I said, there are quite a few baseball major league baseball scouts from the scouting bureau that run baseball camps, so they get themselves exposed because the parents have that financial backing.
Yeah. Well, again, so raw talent is good, just like a raw egg is good. I mean, a raw egg, you can do a lot of different things. You can boil it, you can scramble it, you can have it. You can do a lot of different things with it. A raw carrot, you can do a lot of things with it if it's not already cooked. Again, we got to have a conversation about race and bias. So you have raw talent, but in my mind, the color of your skin immediately leads me to the fact that I think you're bad. I think you're unapproachable, and I think you're lazy. Nothing's going to happen. For instance, I have a fear of pit bull dogs. Okay, and I've had an experience with a pit bull dog when it attacks somebody. When I see a pit bull dog, I get fearful. I'm afraid. Based on what I've heard, and also based on one experience. Not 100 experiences, but one experience. So for me, I reserve the right, when I see a pit bull, to be afraid. If I come to your house for a function, Michael, if you got a pit bull in your house, I am no longer coming to your house. I don't care. I don't care if you got $1 million in there. Now, if I'm a scout, black or white, and I am looking at a baseball player that's black with raw talent, and I have no experience with black people other than what I see on television and what I've heard. On top of the fact that I may have had one bad incident with a black person, I now am going to be prejudiced towards this black player because of my experiences. Okay, now, there are people going to the pit, example, that love pit bulls and could take their time to prove to me that this pit bull will not attack me if they can get me to sit down long enough. And all of a sudden, they start to let me pet it. And I may love that pit bull so much, I may even buy me one. So that not happening, and that's the place where I'm focusing on right now, because there's a lot of good things done in the place of working with black players. But the problem is, it's fragmented and it's not sequenced. And so that is what I do an amazing job of, is sequencing stuff so that here are three things that we got to do first before you meet Hank Aaron. We can't meet Hank Aaron first to try to get you involved with baseball. You should develop a desire. And so, hopefully, I was able to shed some light on that, because we got a lot of people, with all respect, having their good efforts crushed because they're offering something good at the wrong time. You know what I mean?
Yes, I understand.
So what you're doing is great. You're just doing it. You're doing it at the wrong time. You know. You. Okay. So we got this great motivational speaker that you want to bring in, who's played 15 years in the major leagues. That's good. It's just the wrong time. So that's important.
Well, what more can be done to get more exposure for HBCU baseball? And not saying that the scouts aren't there. They are for Division One, our large school division. But with the talent at the lower levels, how do we get more scouts at the game? I know a lot of them say, and coaches have told me, yeah, they tell you what you want to hear. Come draft day, it's a different story. But what must we do? And I asked that question because currently, there's in the works to host an HBCU national championship. What has been accomplished so far is they're waiting to get a response back from the NCAA and the NAIA on how can we do this to include all HBCU teams that have a winning record, meet the playoff criteria to be involved in the HBCU championship. And will it not hurt them if they advance to, say, an NCAA playoff or an NAIA World Series? So it's in the works. And I believe that if that is fruitful, I believe that it could lead to more scouts coming to games like it does now. A lot of the time, the scouts attend the NCAA regional playoffs and then the super regionals. And the same thing for the NAIA. So I think this is a positive step for HBCU baseball.
Well, again, it doesn't matter how you dress it up. If there's an issue of bias from the people watching, it does not matter. Period. So now we got to do is in order for things to get better, we got to actually make sure we agree upon words that we're saying. So, for instance, when you use the word talent, your definition for talent may be different from mine. So if I'm a scout for the Atlanta Braves and I'm out here looking for talent, the role of my definition, not yours. So we got to really make sure we're level set and making sure that we are defining these words the same way. Again, tools, skill. See, these aren't interchangeable words. These are two very different things. When I go into a restaurant and I order a steak and I order it medium, when I get it, it better be medium. I don't want it raw. Period. Now, and if I gotta come in and I gotta get it raw, then I'm not paying you $30 for a steak and I cook it. So, at the college level, to make sure that these guys are ready, you know, and I got to do a little coaching here real quick. So when we look at the word talent, okay, that is synonymous with the skill. It takes 3,000 reps to develop a habit. It takes 10,000 hours to create a skill. So if, no, your school may not have a bat cage, but you better go out here and find some rocks, and you better be hitting them for thousands of hours so that you can have this thing be a skill, so that if you do run across a scout that does not have eyes, you got to be able to do something. So I think that's a good first step, is just really making sure that we're on the same page with the definition of words that are at the scouting department, and not just throwing them out like, you know, I mean, because nobody's drafting you just off of tools. I don't care if you're white. You got to be able to also prove to me that you have the character, the grit, the desire, the knowledge, and the habits. Because again, that's the bridge that's going to take it to a skill. I give you some money for some skill, but the skill's paying the bill. And then I will say the last thing from a coaching standpoint. You got to have a methodology in order to develop this raw talent. And so for me, I have no problem throwing this out. It is a part of the secret sauce, but it's not going to be something that somebody can just take and run with it. But here's my methodology for developing major leaguers. I've been doing it by the grace of God for a long time. I've developed way more first rounders than I ever thought I would be able to, and I've developed way more major leaguers than I thought I would. It's called At-Bats. At-Bat. It starts with assessment. Then the T is training for training. So once I assess that you've got a whole lot of bat speed, but you're not producing power because of a lack of strength in your legs and your back, before I start going into the fundamentals, we're going to be training for strength in the areas that you need it. So A is assessment, T is training for strength, the B is the basics. So these are just the basic things that you need as a hitter. Being loaded, doing it on time, boom, boom, boom. And then the A is now the approach. Not only the physical approach to the ball, but now the mental approach. And so I lean that mental approach in a little bit late, because now I get an opportunity to see what kind of desire this kid has based on what we've done already. And then the T is training for skill. So now it's not just to hit a ball off a tee or get batting practice. When you hit this ball off a tee, I'm going to give you 100 reps, and I want you to hit that target 30 feet away, and I want you to be able to do it 30% of the time. I'm out here throwing batting practice to you. It's 110 degrees in Texas. Doggone it, I want 30% of the balls hitting that right center field gap. That's a skill. But it starts with assessment, training for strength, basic, the whole strength of skill. And then the S is situational hitting. So now we can actually start to apply those skills to the situation. So right there, I just gave an amazing framework that tells us where to start, what's next. But you got coaches right now, God bless us all, that starts with situational hitting. And then 10 minutes later, we're going to work on basics. And then 30 minutes later, we're going to be working on lead pro. And our black boys are struggling every day. They are losing their dreams every single day to coaches who do not have a methodology, do not have a philosophy, do not have a sequence, and can't even have a clear conversation in 10 minutes at all. And so the boys are willing and able, but it's time for our black coaches to be able to step up as well and understand our responsibility is to get people from point A to point B. And if you can't do that, you got to call somebody to get some help, because we are part of the reason why our black boys are struggling and not able to make it in this game.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I do my part trying to get them exposed. But it takes more than just me. It takes more than just Black College Nines. And that's one of the areas that I try to reach out to the coaches. And some of them just don't have a, you know, they're there for one thing. They're being paid to coach and that's it. They don't take that extra mile or, you know, at the end of the day, they're worried about doing something different.
So stop right there, Michael. So right there, that's where my energy needs to go. Not at a point of, you know, hurting somebody and trying to be mean and vindictive, but listen, you know, even with this interview, like, I need for people to be reaching out to me and telling me where they think I'm off base. I need for people to be calling me and telling me, CJ, you were dead on right there, here's why. And so we need to be calling each other out so that we can make sure that thousands of kids, I mean, we're talking about, I mean, let's just say 10,000 kids. For every 10,000 kids, if we had one coach for every 30 of them, we're not talking about the impact of 10,000 coaches. We're talking about a handful of people, and then we need to also be able to clearly say who is the standard. And not a standard, I don't want people looking at my success of developing major leaguers as just something because I throw good batting practice, because I don't. It's because I have busted my butt and I have questioned myself to understand, CJ, what's the method by which you are doing this? Okay, what's first, what's next, and really studying this thing, because look, anybody can get a bucket and a tee. If it were that easy to just throw balls, then baseball would be equivalent to kickball. No disrespect to the game of kickball, but it just seemed to be a game where everybody can jump on that. But nobody's paying $100 for a ticket to go watch people play kickball. So we got to start having some respect. And the people that are calling themselves a coach, no different than a doctor. A doctor is going to be able to have a set amount of ability to do things, even if they don't have equipment. A good doctor does not need equipment to deliver a baby. It would be nice. But from right now, calling out myself and all coaches, if you truly want to help black boys, if you do not have a philosophy that you can speak to very quickly, if you do not have a methodology that you can speak to very quickly, you are not equipped to convert black boys' dreams to a reality.
Well, Coach, winding this down, I just got one more question for you. This month, you're having your second annual Safe at Home game in Atlanta. How did this come about?
Oh, man, it's an awesome story. So Brad Jubin, a very good friend of mine, he has an organization called a PBO, which stands for Always Play For Each Other, and he really pays a lot of attention and time to the character development of athletes, as well as grit, which is those two parts of the framework that are very important to me. And so we were working together and trying to figure out synergies, and I had our fall Legacy League game, the self-officiated game that I was telling you about. And this was right after shooting of Michael Brown. And Brad is a white male. I believe he's from New York. He currently is in the suburbs of Atlanta. So he decided he was going to come down, and he admitted that he was, you know, a bit fearful coming into the inner city of Atlanta. So he gets out of the car, he goes through this experience with our boys, and he says, you know what, it was not as bad as I perceived it to be. See, folks that I'm around, we have honest conversations. And so out of that conversation, he then said, the world needs to see the goodness of our kids in the inner city of Atlanta. The world also needs to see the goodness of our cops in the inner city of Atlanta. And so that's how we came up with the Safe at Home game. The name itself was a name that my wife, Kelly, was reserving for another project that we were doing. And it was perfectly fit. And so we're going to have that game on Saturday, August 20th. Matter of fact, tonight I'm going to be doing my second police ride along here in the inner city of Atlanta. And to note the seriousness of crime in Georgia, youth from zip codes 3310, 3315, and 3018, these are inner city Atlanta zip codes. Those kids grow up to represent 80% of the prison population for the entire state of Georgia. The reason why that's important is because Georgia ranks number one in America in incarceration. Take it a step further, America ranks number one in the world. Now, here's the ironic part. The kids in my organization leave. You talk about putting your money and your time when you're out there. My kids come from those zip codes. I was born and raised in 3318. So one of the things that we're going to be able to do with this Safe at Home game is actually put actions to words. You know, we can say that, you know, black kids and black cops need to come together. We're playing a game at Georgia Tech, which is the number one baseball facility in America. So be our lead ambassadors against our Atlanta Police Department. August 20th, last year we won 6-5. And believe it or not, the APD actually has several players on their team that play double-A baseball, including Chief Police here in Atlanta. His son, Tim Turner, played in the Padres organization. So it's going to be an amazing time.
Well, Coach, I thank you for your time, and I ask that you continue to do what you're doing. But also, and I really thank you for your involvement with HBCU baseball. This will conclude this interview.